This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Welcome back, everybody, to a special edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast. It's been a while. It really has. This is sports editor Chris Kwasinski alongside social media manager and Tribune photojournalist Madeline Carter.
It's been a day, besties. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. The biggest news of the day and the month, perhaps the year for Mizzou. Konzo Martin has been fired as the men's basketball coach. He's out after five seasons, a 78-77 record overall at Mizzou. Not very sparkling record in the SEC. It's one of those things where you kind of wondered if this is going to happen really back in November after the team lost a 14-point loss to Missouri Kansas City, a team that if you're a Mizzou, you should not lose to. I know a lot of discussions and rumblings began then. And now we've arrived. It's March. March Madness is around the corner, and Mizzou will spend its March Madness looking for a next head coach. Madeline, what are your initial thoughts?
I think I have a lot of them. And, I mean, you and I were discussing this before, but I think this was such a big move for the athletic director, Desiree, because I think there were a lot of people who were saying, well, she's friends with Konzo, you know, she found him and she brought him to Tennessee, you know, what does this mean for this? And I think a lot of people were trying to say that their friendship would keep them from this, but I think this is her saying, no, I mean business, and I'm going to make this my own athletic department.
Yeah, this is truly the biggest decision she's made since coming to Mizzou. Not even a year in her tenure. I mean, she started about a week before I moved to Columbia. So, I mean, we both got here about the same time, and she's arguably made a much bigger splash than I have. But that's where we're at right now. You know, where we're looking at not only a significant and a seismic shift in college basketball, where there's a lot of programs out there looking for a head coach right now. There's Georgia, there's Maryland. There's just, not to even mention all the mid-majors, which are now looking too, which this head coaching hire is going to either create a domino effect or be a result of a lot of the domino effects that some of these higher level coaching hires will create. And right now we're here to figure out which is it, you know, which is it going to be? Does Mizzou have someone in mind, or does Mizzou take their time? You know, these other positions like Louisville and Maryland have been open for months on end. I know Georgia just opened about a week ago, but right now we're looking at a seismic shift, and we're looking at a seismic shift with Desiree. This is truly her first spot, and really, when it comes to Desiree, if you're in her shoes, you know what kind of splash are you looking to make? Is it, do you want someone that's going to come in and be experienced, or do you want someone that's going to be here for the long haul? Do you go for the hot name?
Well, I think, if anything, this fire and then, of course, Tom Crean's fire has proved, you know, a lot that we already knew about the SEC, which is that the SEC is really, really, really tough to coach in. I mean, I grew up watching Tom Crean at Marquette. I'm from Milwaukee. And, you know, he's a Marquette Hall of Fame coach. You know, he turned Dwayne Wade into who he is. He turned Jimmy Butler into who he is. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you're automatically going to do great in the SEC. You have to be another breed of good for the SEC. Just like, you know, Konzo he's a great coach and a great man, but I just think that this is not a fit for everyone. Which brings us, I think, to that whole controversial talk about, you know, are they going to bring in Kim English with, you know, 1 year under his belt at a mid-major school?
Yeah, at George Mason. I mean, there's a lot to dissect specifically with that. And I know we're going to come back a little bit to that and circle back when we talk about potential replacements. But I mean, when you talk about the prevailing thought, which is two things can be true at the same time. One, Konzo is a great person. Like, you talk about someone who has incredible grace, who has come from a dark place, I guess you could say a dark place in East St. Louis, where he grew up, to overcome a cancer diagnosis as a player, which effectively ended his pro career. to leading men, to creating college players, which went on to be great players, to go to a Sweet 16 at Tennessee, to leave that situation. I knew that it wasn't great for him to go to Cal, to make that a great place. I mean, he recruited Jaylen Brown, if I'm not mistaken, who's now with the Boston Celtics, and then came back to Missouri to the SEC. So, I mean, you're talking about someone that has that grace. Even helped out Coach Drinkwitz in recruiting Luther Burden. How many basketball coaches would go out of their way to do that? I mean, he could easily just said, hey, this is my program. You worry about your program, worry about mine. But he went out of his way to do that and cement the football program. And you can't say enough about that. But at the same time, the other side of that is it just wasn't a great fit for him.
Well, and I think the thing that I've been kind of hearing from some student athletes who are not at Mizzou but in other places that I know is just that these coaching, you know, these firings are really, really tough on the student athletes. You know, the grief doesn't just end with, well, this coach, you know, lost his job. You know, that grief carries over into it's hard for the staff, it's hard for the students, it's hard for the family. And I think sometimes, you know, sports fans, we can be a little overdramatic. And I think that people tend to lose sight of that, that this is a hard thing for not just him to deal with, but for now all of his students. And, you know, there's a lot of worry now over, you know, is Kobe staying? Is Javon staying? So, I mean, that's a whole new issue.
Yeah, no, it really is. And you bring up a great point of Mizzou fans have been through this not just a year ago, coming off the NCAA tournament, seeing a mass exodus of players, Xavier Pinson being one of them, who had a pretty big hand in ending Mizzou's season the other day. I mean, in the SEC tournament.
He blew a kiss to the Mizzou marching band after drilling down a three.
Yeah. So, I mean, and a lot of people, I remember they're asking Will Wade after the game, like, did this mean anything more to X than maybe, and I know they asked him that before back when in February when the two played it, but and they kind of said, well, I didn't see anything different, but there's got to be a point where you say, like, yeah, of course it did. Of course it did. He's a competitor. He's a guy that that wants to win and to beat the school that you were at. I mean, that's something else. And so he had a hand in that, and you just saw a year's worth of developments coming to a head here, and now we're here. I mean, you can look at the first year and the first year and then last year as well, going to the NCAA tournament, and kind of say, well, you know, the success is there. The success is there if you give him the time and if you give him the patience. And I think that can be said for the first year too. I mean, he comes in off the Kim Anderson years and really turns everything around. I mean, Michael Porter Jr., Jonte Porter, 20 wins in an NCAA tournament berth. And obviously Michael didn't play very much that year, only I believe 60 minutes out of an entire season, unfortunately, but he still revitalized excitement in Mizzou basketball. And I can ask you this, is how important is that excitement?
I do not think the SEC is a place where you want to be mediocre at anything. And I have heard it put very bluntly by some Mizzou fans that we do not want to be the Vanderbilt football of SEC men's basketball. So you can do with that analysis or as you will.
Yeah, no, but it's a great point. And honestly, you don't really have to look very far. You could just look at photos of the seats. You could look at Mizzou Arena throughout SEC play as well. You could see the apathy starting to set in. And it's a bummer, too, because, I mean, obviously, I don't know if this was a result of him having success right away, you know, getting Michael Porter and going to the tournament his first year, and then people expecting, hey, like, this should be an every year occurrence, which in the SEC, you can make that argument that you should always be a contender for the tournament in every single year, no matter what. I mean, you look at Texas A&M with Buzz Williams, they, I believe, lost 8 games in February, between January and February, 1 to Mizzou at home. And now they look like they're about to make the NCAA tournament after beating Auburn in the SEC tournament. So you think about just the expectations that carries. And when it comes to this head coaching position, obviously the history is there. You have Coach Norm Stewart. I mean, someone who I remember talking to, a former player of Norm, and I called him Norm. I said, well, you know, Norm put this expectation of you was for the Kansas rivalry, actually. And he stopped me, and it was Corey Tate stopped me and said, Chris, I have to stop you. You don't call him Norm. You call him Coach Stewart. And I was like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. But that's part of it is there's that history. There's that background. And that expectation has been set. How important is that expectation in this coaching search?
I mean, it's important for multiple reasons, but another thing that you kind of have to keep in mind is, you know, Mizzou is already in the red with their finances. So number one, that's going to impact their coaching search. But number two, you know, you lose a lot of money when you don't have fans selling out that arena. And you bank a lot on hoping that they will come and do that. And, you know, we saw that with Auburn. We saw that in maybe, what, the first game of the season. But we never really saw anything like that since. And so, you know, this was just kind of one of those things where it was, well, do you keep him and maybe run the risk of going into more red because your academic your athletic program isn't doing well? It isn't performing. And so you're just going to keep progressing into that red.
And the flip side of that is, well, you look at what he's been able to do in 1 year coming here, flipping everything around. And you see the players he has coming in with Christian Jones, a combo guard, who that's an athletic player who he could be maybe looking at to run the point. Maybe he could have recruited a point guard to come in the next couple of months. He's got Aiden Shaw, a four-star forward coming in, which is immediate help in the post alongside Trevin Brazil. That you talk about that player that's become a cornerstone. And maybe if he's still here, he convinces Javon Pickett to come back for another year. You don't know that. If Javon's still on his fence, does he come back? Does he transfer to another program? Does he just call basketball quits as a whole? Like, that's his decision to make, and that's something we'll find out in the next couple of weeks, maybe even the next month or so. But I mean, this is where we find out what Mizzou is perceived as, because not just talking about the Louisville hire, but also the Maryland opening too. Coaches are going to look at this program and say, like, well, do I prefer to coach at Louisville or Maryland or Mizzou? And if they pick either of them,
Or Georgia,
excuse me. You have to sit back and go, well, how do we change that? And obviously, I think a way to change that is to keep the players you have. I mean, Brazil, is one of those players that you saw, that we saw, everybody saw, not just improve, but improve massively over the course of the season.
Well, and the thing, the Trevon Brazil news that we got today was, you know, right after this firing, there was a really sweet tweet from the student managers for the team, and, you know, they thanked Konzo for everything. But Trevon hopped on Twitter and said, just want to see something real quick, M-I-Z. And, you know, you've got fans just flooding his mention with Z-O-U. I'm looking at it now, and it's got, like, over 1,000 likes, and it's this photo of him, you know, getting ready for a game. So I think that was one way to squash any wonderings about, you know, is he going or is he staying? I don't know.
Yeah, it is comforting. You never know until, you know, the official word gets put in. But at the same time, it's nice to see that, especially from a player that gave you a lot of hope. And I remember in February asking, you know, what do you have to do to get better? And he really just bluntly was just like, well, I got to stop playing around the perimeter. I got to be in the post, and you got to get bigger. And that's a player that, you know, the talent's there, if the skills are there, a coach can coach, you know, getting bigger and adding that. And now, I mean, you just got to hope he stays.
Well, and I mean, you really have to feel for these students and how much they have been through in the past 24 hours, because right before this firing today, there was reports that they traveled through the snow. They flew back through the snow when, you know, reporters who were at the SEC tournaments, they were getting their flights canceled today. And those students and Konzo still made it back just for the news to drop at, you know, 5 p.m. on a Friday that, you know, Konzo got back and he was fired.
Yeah. It's tough. And I do think a lot of the times you lose a lot of the empathy in sports. And this is one of those times to remember, hey, they're human, especially the fact that he put his roots here. His kids went to Tolton, I believe. I mean, you talk about his wife establishing a go-to for other wives that have coaches.
A support group and organization called Married to the Game. She started that, I think it was Tennessee. And it was just the support group for other women who have, you know, their husbands are coaches. But the thing that I think kind of shocked a lot of Mizzou fans is I think it was really hard to justify him staying with this point, because, I mean, this was like the loudest feedback about a coach at Mizzou that I've ever seen. You know, I was here for when Barry Odom went out, and even that was the push to get Odom out was much, much softer than this. But I think this, the timeline of all of this kind of shocked Mizzou fans, because I think that while they kind of knew that this might be coming, they thought, well, oh, it'll happen, you know, after May 1st so they can get that softer buyout. But when we talked to a lawyer who, disclaimer, was my dad, you know, he broke down that contract and he looked at it for us. And I think we were surprised to find that, no, they could do this now.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of a reminder for, I mean, not just sports, but for everything, and that this is a business. I mean, this is very much so a business, to where not only are you going to find a way, or can you find a way to get out, but to it's possible. And if you need to make a move, then you're going to have to make a move. And I mean, it stinks, because the one thing I always come back to is, through my career and that kind of stuff, learning from coaches, is that, you know, when I've talked to coaches, both high school, college, pro level, you name it, I mean, there's always something to be said for when you can talk to a coach and they can break something down and you can actually come away with something. You know, there's a lot of coach speak out there. There's a lot of times when you talk to coaches, they say a lot of gibberish and jargon. We're like, that's not English to me. I don't know what you're talking about. But when it came to Konzo, was one of those coaches that knew how to vocalize that and to put it into words. And I really appreciated learning from him. And that's something I'll always remember, especially with him being, you know, patient with us and some of the media, some of the questions that you continuously get, you know, why is this a struggle? Why is this happening? Sometimes he didn't have the answer. Sometimes, and he was upfront with that. And when he did, he would explain it to us in a way that made sense. And then, you know, I always appreciate that, especially with the coach. It shows experience, but also shows grace.
Well, and I think you were kind of saying, you said something today that was really well put. When we were talking about it, you said, you know, I judge coaches by how much I learn from them.
Yeah, that's, I always kind of go back. My first job was being a sports reporter in Utah. And there's a coach out there. His name is Corey Nielsen. And he coaches a girls basketball team at Cedar High School. And he specifically talked a lot. Whenever I'd sit down with him, he'd open up this drawer and he'd pull out, you know, notes on notes. And he'd say, I know exactly what's going to happen. And I know exactly what the other team is going to do. And I know exactly how to teach it. That's the mark of a great coach. And you saw that at times this year too, even with a bunch of transfers, a bunch of new faces, a bunch of new players that Konzo maybe didn't even get to know that well before he was fired, just because he brought them in his first year. There's a lot more learning for everybody to get to know about these players. And, to the point where you saw it in specific games. Like, I think the Auburn game is one of them. The Alabama game at home at Mizzou Arena, where the game plan worked. The game plan was effective to the point where they upset Alabama at home and then turned around and almost upset number one Auburn at home. Like, that's the kind of stuff where you say, like, okay, like, it's there. You can see it. It's palpable, but it just wasn't consistent enough.
Well, and, you know, I kind of mentioned this on one of our previous episodes, but, you know, when I'm on the floor and I'm photographing them, I can hear things that, you know, the fans and that you guys up in the press box, you don't necessarily hear. And what's interesting to me is, you know, I've photographed a lot of preps games. I've photographed a lot of different teams, from Kansas to Alabama. But I had never quite heard anyone as frustrated with themselves and with kind of the direction that they were going in as these Mizzou players. And, you know, it's hard because you're in your early 20s. You're in college to really still work on your craft in basketball. Just because, you know, you're at a good school doesn't mean you have it all. And just listening to them, you know, get frustrated with each other and get frustrated with themselves, they knew that it wasn't working. And I think that's really, really, really hard. And, you know, you had one player transfer out this year in the middle of the season. Frankly, like, I was kind of shocked that there weren't more.
Especially as things got more difficult. But that's also stuff that you can't control as a head coach, especially how you can't control injuries. I mean, throughout the rest of most of February, as you played with eight players. And I mean, every time you'd ask, you know, Kobe, Javon in press conferences, you know, what can you do? How do you acclimate to that? Is there any way to, and they'd be basically like, no, there's really not much you can do with eight players in practice in basketball. You need 10. And that was just part of the struggle. Maybe if it was different, things would be different. But this is just where we are right now. You know, we're going to take a quick break, a look at some of the sponsors, and then We'll come back to you with maybe an idea of who we think is going to be taking over here.
You guys know as well as we do.
Yeah. We would like to thank our sponsors for the Columbia Daily Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast, University of Missouri Healthcare. University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to be the official sponsor of MU Athletics. Blue Events. Let Blue create the perfect event. Their passion for food, service, and presentation ensures that you will have a seamless and memorable event, no matter the size. They will work with you to bring your vision to life. Phyllis Nichols, State Farm Insurance. There when things go wrong, here to help life go right. The Mizzou Sports Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. Follow Mizzou football with the Tribune's Tiger Extra newsletter. Sign up at columbiatribune.com/TigerExtra for stories, galleries, and podcasts in your inbox every Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. And now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. We're still in the newsroom. It's almost 9 at night, and we are in our pajamas because that is what it looks like when days like this happen.
Yeah, there's really no other way. And this is, I mean, it's a lot of looking at how the journalists deal with breaking news. When I first remember breaking one of like my first news stories, like way back in the day as a student journalist, I remember running around my house just being like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? It's like, well, you're right about it. Stop it. And we did that today. And we've got two stories out in ColumbiaDailyTribune.com, and we'll have more as the weekend goes. But for now, we're going to circle back at the back end of this podcast, besties, with a little bit of...
Yes!
Madeline taught me that phrase, and I'm going to stick with it. But we're going to circle on the back end of this podcast with talking about just the idea of who's going to be coming in, who's going to be the next guy at Mizzou. And we have a list of potential candidates that we published on Tribune.com, ColumbiaTribune.com, that is. And now we're just start there. What do you think?
Well, you were working on that for quite some time. So, you know, who did you find and who's of interest to you?
Yeah, if you start anywhere, the place that I wanted to start was like the names of like, okay, give them a call first. You know, you have to think about, if you're Mizzou and if you want to be respected as this national basketball brand, you have to think about names that either have had success at the college basketball level to a very high level, or have, you know, are experienced to the point where they're coming in, you know, they're going to do a good job. And the two minds that, or the two names that came to my mind were Kelvin Sampson at Houston, someone who has coached a myriad of places. I mean, Indiana, Oklahoma, and came back to have, I mean, a resounding career at Houston. I mean, he's taken them to the Big 12 to the point where, yeah, they're legit. They're for real. That's a big reason why Houston is going to the Big 12. But also John Beilein, a former Michigan head coach, went to the NBA and didn't really work out there. But we know as an established college coach, someone who's worked his way all the way from lower divisions to the Big 10. So that's a person that knows, I believe between the two of them, there's over 600 some career wins. I mean, you can't argue with career success like that specifically.
Well, so, I mean, there were a few things that we were talking about today that I think would be, you know, worth bringing up. And that's that, you know, number one, you have to think about Mizzou kind of has this weird obsession with bringing in really, really family-friendly coaches. We really haven't had anyone that controversial, or really at all controversial, which is interesting because now people are bringing up that they want to see someone like Sean Miller. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that, and probably a little description for those who don't know, you know, what's going on there.
Yeah, and for those who know Sean Miller, there's no introduction is necessary because you know him as the guy at Arizona that took the Wildcats to a pretty solid run. I mean, this is a guy that was at Xavier, came to Arizona as a three-time Pac-12 Coach of the Year in 2011, 14, and 17. He was A-10 Coach of the Year in 2008. He won the Pac-12 tournament three times. This is a guy that has had sustained success, especially at Arizona. He finished his tenure at Arizona with 302 wins. I mean, you don't really need to, the proof is in the pudding, as a lot of them say, but you can't really overlook the reason why he was fired from Arizona State. It was because of the FBI investigations into him and into his program. And that's something where you kind of look back and you're like, well, do you want that? Do you want that associated with your program? And he's been out of the game for a couple of years now. Was fired after the 2021 season, and for the whole year he's just been there. And that's a coach with obviously an impeccable resume, but do you really want the baggage that comes with that?
Because when when I look at, you know, someone like Larissa Anderson, Eli Drinkwitz, Barry Odom, even Konzo, those are really, really family-friendly coaches. That's someone where if I had a kid, you know, I'd feel comfortable with them looking at that person and being like, yep, that's my role model. Someone like Bruce Pearl, maybe not so much. And I think, you know, Mizzou has always kind of stayed away from the people who were kind of like the Bruce Pearls. And I saw one Mizzou fan tweet today, you know, they were kind of talking about how Konzo Martin is a really, really good person. And when it comes down to it, he is a good coach. It's just a, you know, tough program, but they were really excited to see those two kind of things blend together, because I think in sports, and especially in basketball, you don't always see that. You know, the good coaches, sometimes they're not really great people.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that can be said, and there's always a connection too. And I mean, you talk about Bruce Pearl, he was the coach at Tennessee that when he got fired, that's why Konzo ended up at Tennessee. It was because of those specific investigations into Bruce Pearl's staff. And that's why when they started with Konzo, like, they wanted that guy. They wanted that guy, like you said, that's going to be that great image.
I also just want to say, side note, I was not familiar with Bruce Pearl's personality before photographing him this year. And so when I got down to the court, I was, you know, a little bit out of it, because I think some people may know I put photographing games on pause for a little bit this season because I got long COVID from photographing a Mizzou game. And that was my first game back. And I came down to the court. I had my ice pack on my chest. I was like, okay, like, I just need to take it easy. And this guy's just screaming his head off at these refs. I'm watching this ref, like, just walk down the court being like, oh, it's going to be such a long night. Like, you could just see it in his face. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is that Bruce Pearl guy everyone is talking about.
Yeah, that is Bruce Pearl. It's especially in a nutshell. That's, but that also begs in the question of, like, well, at this point, what do you value more? Which is, do you value face? Do you value that grace in a program, or do you value the wins? Because, I mean, you look at Auburn, they locked him up for life. He's a life contract. Bruce Pearl does now at Auburn. But many people thought, okay, maybe he'd be a player for the Louisville job, because Louisville being that high profile sort of job too, is to the point where you're like, okay, well, a lot of people are going to want that job, especially not even 10 years ago. Rick Pitino, there's another name that won a national championship there, beating Michigan. And so you talk about, you know, who do you want? Do you want a guy that's going to win games, or do you want a guy that's going to have a great program? And Konzo was the guy that had a great program, and he took teams to the NCAA tournament. But like you were kind of saying, like, maybe it's sometimes not a great fit, and that's okay.
Well, and I think another funny thing is that you'll kind of start to see, like, Lincoln Riley situations almost, because, you know, someone brought up, you know, maybe we could get the coach from Drake. And I know earlier you were saying, well, people were kind of complaining and saying, well, he just signed an extension. Well, yeah, but a lot of people's end goals is to get to a place like the SEC. Like, the SEC is absolutely an end goal for a lot of coaches. That's something that a lot of coaches would, you know, Brian Kelly it up and leave overnight and, you know, an 11-minute goodbye and, you know, that's it.
Yep.
But would Mizzou really want a coach who does that sort of thing?
Well, it really depends. And thank you for bringing up the Notre Dame to LSU thing, because I'm still not over that. But anyway.
I'm sorry.
It is what it is. The thing with Drake, when you mentioned Coach Darian DeVries there, a guy that just signed an 8-year extension to remain at Drake, a guy that's taken his team not just to the NCAA tournament, but as an at-large bid, to be a mid-major, to have a two-bid conference, like, that's unheard of now, especially in this day and age where Power 5 conferences rule everything and they're going to get the benefit of the doubt. And you saw a lot of mid-major teams that were probably deserving just don't make the tournament because, frankly, they're mid-majors. And this is a guy that's won a lot of games. He's taken Drake to the NCAA tournament. Maybe he gets another one, another at-large bid this year for the tournament too, to the point where you go, like, that's a guy that can flat-out coach. That's a guy that can build a program. And I know Nico Medved was at Drake for a year or two and then moved to Colorado State. He basically took over that program and didn't skip a beat. You know, he brought them to new heights. And that's the kind of question you want. Like, do you want to bring a guy from a mid-major? And the thing is, it's never guaranteed coming from mid-major to the SEC, especially at that level. I mean, where you're competing against higher level talent, you have to get used to that. But at the same time, Porter Moser at Loyola did exactly that at Oklahoma. Got a lot of really good players to transfer in. The Groves brothers from Eastern Washington, I watched them play. They're really good to the point where they're having immediate success. And that's not something you can really discount, too. But at the same time, it's not the same for everybody.
Well, and, you know, tonight I was adding a new Squishmallow to my collection at my desk here in the newsroom. And I found a newspaper from March, how fitting, last March, where the front page was just this big blow up about how King English was just hired for his first head coaching job. And you have to wonder how serious they might take, you know, that kind of thing, because what I'm kind of seeing here is the same thing that we saw when Drinkwitz came in. On one hand, there were people who were thrilled, you know, and you're never going to get anyone who's 100% on board with any coach. But there were people who were thrilled about Drinkwitz and, you know, what he could do for the program. And then there were other people who were like, well, you know, he's never coached in anything like the SEC before. What's he going to do here? And I, you know, you have to imagine, and you're already kind of seeing it now, a lot of, you know, the opinions on Kim English coming to Mizzou are very, very similar to that and to when Drinkwitz came in here.
Yeah, and the similarities are striking to the point of where you can look at Drinkwitz's profile coming in and hearing those people say, this is the next guy, this is the next big thing. And a lot of people are saying the same thing about Kim English, and to the point where, he's a head coach for 1 year. He didn't have the same success that Drinkwitz had in his 1 year at Appalachian State. He's 14-14, but I mean, you can't ignore the hot, like, you can't ignore the hot name that's at the forefront.
And I mean, you can't ignore the fact that, you know, they came into Allen Fieldhouse and what they did there compared to what Mizzou did there.
For context.
Wow.
For context, Mizzou came to Allen Fieldhouse in December and lost by 38. Kim English's George Mason Patriots came in as an Atlantic 10 school his first year on the job and lost by 8. And you can say, like, well, they still lost. Yeah, they still lost, but losing by 8 as opposed to by 38?
A single-digit number to Kansas, who I have them in my Final Four this year.
I mean,
come on.
You watch that team and you realize.
I'm sorry to the Mizzou fans who are now, like, you can hate me for that. I'm so sorry.
I mean, that's the point of, I mean, do you want to win Warren Buffett's $1 million out of the bracket? I do. And if you want to do it, you can't deny Kansas. You can't deny the skill. And again, we apologize. But in any case, you have to look at that success and just be like, okay, maybe he's onto something. He gets something. And it's never easy to take a program and turn it around and get 500 wins in the first year at a mid-major. But at the same time, that relative experience, you kind of, you know, do you really want that? But at the same time, he spent time under Rick Barnes at Tennessee. You know, his coaching stock, it doesn't just, you know, come up out of nowhere. But at the same time, you're also talking about someone who is here at Mizzou for some great seasons. This is a guy that understands the culture. He understands Mizzou. He understands Columbia. This is a guy that has heralded for his recruiting prowess, too. He's bringing top 100 players to George Mason in his first year. So you can say, well, yeah, the experience is one thing, but there's a reason he's a hot name. So if you're looking at it, what's the one thing that stands out to you more? Is it the success or is it an experience?
Look, I mean, like, it would be a risky hire, but at the same time, it would also be so promising and exciting. And I think that, you know, with, again, it's funny because Kim English and I think Konzo are very similar people in that they're so kind, but they just didn't have what it took for this program. And that's okay. But you look at that and, you know, you kind of look at how many years, you know, Mizzou basketball has been lacking, and you think about how exciting it would get to it would be to get a coach like that in this program. You know, you need someone who's going to come in here. And, you know, the thing that I was kind of telling you is, you know, yeah, it sucks because Konzo was dealt with a really, really tough set of cards. You know, he came in here and had to turn whatever that was from the Kim English era around. But at the same time, you know, Drinkwitz had to come in here and turn what Barry Odom did around, and he did it and then some.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard to kind of justify that when, you know, that's an example that's right in front of you.
Yeah, going from Kim Anderson to Kim English years later, I mean, you just think about the dichotomy of what could be. Because, I mean, you think back and you think about 107 victories in 4 years. That's what Kim English was part of when he was at Mizzou. Steve Moore, Marcus Denman, that was more wins by any senior class in Mizzou basketball history. Like, this is a guy that understands how to win at Mizzou. This is a guy that understands, granted, it was the Big 12 before going to the SEC, but at the same time, this is a guy that understands Mizzou. And when you talk about that, how much weight does that carry? Can you put up with some of the inexperience? Can you really trust in him as a recruiter? Really sounds like Drinkwitz, honestly, but that's just where it's coming from. And at the end of the day, we're going to find out, because this is Desiree Reed-Francois' first big move. We mentioned it before, and this is something that she's going to be judged on, because you can't, your first hire has to be the big one. And this is where, when you think about it, in 2 to 3 years, is it going to be Kim English? Because in that case, I think you give him more like 4 to 5 as a guy to, like, okay, get your feet wet. It's going to be tough the first year. So where do you go from there?
It's almost nerve-wracking because, you know, I'm interested to see, I know we've got like kind of a taste of how she would make a hire in the SEC because she did that at Tennessee. But I'm interested to see how she makes a hire in this position with the state that this program has been in, you know, since Norm Stewart. And it's hard not to wonder. It's hard not to be curious. And it was, you know, she really proved something to Mizzou fans. And I know I said it in the beginning, I'll say it again. She proved something to Mizzou fans here by carrying out this fire and by saying, no, like, you can't pull the he's my friend card on me. I'm here and I want you to take me seriously. And that's big. I mean, this woman means business.
Not only does she mean business, but I mean, like, yeah, this is the same person that, I mean, everybody looks to leaders like that in this kind of time. And I think it speaks volume because, I mean, throughout the week, I mean, you were hearing, well, like, she said it before, I believe she told PowerMizzou.com, which is like, hey, like, we evaluate everything at the end of the season. And
you know, that is in his contract, that at the end of every year, they have to go in with the AD and they have to sit down and have a talk about the direction that the program is going underneath them. And so that was something that we knew was coming up regardless, which, you know, it's so hard to have this conversation after the year that they've had and say, well, what happens if I give you one year? You know, if you make promises here, are they going to be empty?
Yeah. And now when you think about it, those promises are going to be what carries Mizzou to the next stage of Mizzou basketball. And right now, that's the most intriguing part. And I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know about you, but I mean, like, it's so interesting. It's not going to be as crazy as last year's coaching cycle in college basketball. We know Duke, North Carolina, both losing their head coaches. But I mean, right now, this is where we're at right now. This is a new era. Desiree is going to be leading it, and you just have to watch and wait and see. So,
well, and I want to, you know, be a little more candid and say, you know, for everyone who's listening, Chris has done a phenomenal job heading this sports section, and he's done it alone for a while. We're winding down and getting ready to bring a new someone in. But, you know, today it was largely just Chris who handled this, and you did a phenomenal job. And, you know, this isn't the end. This is just the beginning. And, you know, the Tribune, we're here. We're going to cover the searches. We're going to cover, you know, the whispers, and we're going to cover, you know, from the very first time they make it official to when that coach, you know, makes their grand entrance into Mizzou. And I'll be photographing it, and Chris will be writing about it and getting those quotes. And, you know, so it'll be a really, really exciting thing to stick by. And, you know, it's also just really exciting to be part of, you know, the daily newspaper for Columbia and report on that for this city that, you know, cares so much about seeing this program turn around.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. Thank you. But I mean, it's, you can't do it by yourself. There's a whole slew of editors. There's a whole slew of digital operation friends. And there's a photojournalist that can tell you things that I wouldn't know sitting on press row, especially getting to see Bruce Pearl for the first time. So, so that's a good place to wrap up. I think we're going to end that there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the new faces and the new friends we're going to have at the Tribune, hopefully coming sometime soon. And then at that point, we'll introduce them to you when that happens.
So, I mean, until then, you know, follow the Tribune on Twitter, follow our sports section on Twitter. That's CDT Sports. And we're back on Instagram. So when we do get that new coach in and maybe even find some, you know, other features for that, that'll be on our Instagram, and that's Columbia Daily Tribune. Chris is OchoK_ on Twitter.
And Madeline is @Fleetwood_Mad. So both have underscores in our name. That's where we're at. And for the next time, thank you for listening, friends, readers, listeners, subscribers. If you do subscribe, thank you so much. Please subscribe and read our work. If you do, it keeps us going, and it keeps quality journalism going in Columbia. And for now, thank you. See you next time.
We're going to bed.